the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight deceit.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
And when somebody says, I'm for religious freedom and what I mean by it is merely the right to worship, you know that what you have there is an enemy of religious freedom, not a friend of religious freedom.
The odd thing about this weird sort of secular religion of sexual progressivism is that the way you become righteous is by screaming in defense of some group that nobody else is defending.
Christians will do good. They will. They will do good works. Good works follow faith always.
Missouri dairy farmers love issues, etc.
Ordinarily, you would expect for one of the seven sisters, one of the seven mainline Protestant denominations, including the United Methodist Church, usually expect them to trend toward the left, don't you? Usually tend jet gradually or more directly toward the left. I saw some news going into the weekend that really surprised me. News out of the United Methodist Church, their general conference, that they were bucking that trend a little bit, at least on one issue. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon, May the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Jeff Walton's going to join us here for the first few minutes. We're going to be talking with him about the United Methodist Church's General Conference. He covered it for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. Dr. Carl Fikentscher will join us after that. We're going to be looking forward to Sunday morning toward that gospel reading where Jesus heals a centurion's servant, an issue of authority, and Jesus saying, I have not seen such faith even in Israel, when the man says, I know what authority is. I tell my servants to go do something. They do it. I'm a man under authority myself. What about that statement says to Jesus that this centurion has an unheard of before faith? Cheryl Magnus will join us after that. We're going to talk about a president's character and why, in spite of what many are saying, it really does still matter. Then Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. Our series, Top Three Verses, coming off of Trinity Sunday, we'll do top three verses on the Trinity. You can join us with questions or comments over the course of the next 2 hours of the program, or call in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc, or if you're one of our beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to use the Issues Etc. comment line. It's always open for you. 618-223-8382. Joining us for a review of the United Methodist Church's recent general conference, Jeff Walton. He covered the UMC's general conference for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. Jeff, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
For conservatives, what's the perhaps the most exciting or encouraging news to come out of the United Methodist Church's general conference?
There were some pretty significant strides that were made on sanctity of life issues at General Conference this year. There were two votes in particular that were really cheered by conservatives. The first was a vote to disaffiliate church agencies from a pro-abortion advocacy organization known as the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. This is a group that essentially exists to provide a veneer of religious approval for unrestricted abortion on demand. And it's also an organization that the United Methodist Church had a hand in founding over 40 years ago. So the decision to force the church's lobbying office, known as the General Board on Church and Society, and the United Methodist Women's Division to cease their relationship with RCRC as coalition members was very significant. A second thing that was also related to this had to do with some language in the denomination's Book of Resolutions. For about 43 years, the United Methodist Church has had language in this book which broadly affirms the Roe versus Wade court decision. This is language that was basically par for the course with other mainline churches back in the early 1970s, which all tended to be in favor of unrestricted abortion rights. And for the first time this year, the Methodist General Conference voted to delete that language from its Book of Resolutions. In the Methodist Church, resolutions with this kind of language have to be reaffirmed every 8 years or they go away. And the language was set to expire, and the delegates chose, instead of renewing it, to let it expire. So what we've seen in these two different developments, both the RCRC withdrawal and the elimination of the Roe-affirming language, is two significant steps in a more pro-life direction in America's largest mainline Protestant denomination.
Well, is there, for both of these, and they're obviously related in some way, is there a rationale, or could you tease out a rationale on both of these decisions that appear to be turning a bit of a corner for this mainline denomination?
Yeah, and it is a significant corner to turn. Of the seven sisters of mainline Protestant Christianity, they have all pretty much gone in a more left-leaning direction, except for the United Methodist Church. There is a unique reason for this, and that is that the Methodist Church is a global denomination. When missionaries were sent out from the American Methodist Church across the world, the churches that they planted in places such as sub-Saharan Africa and the Philippines began to be a part of the United Methodist denomination. And because of that, they have representation at these governing bodies such as General Conference. So what you have is sort of a reflection of what's happening in many other families of churches where the global south of Christianity, which is more traditional, more focused on issues of evangelism and discipleship and less focused on political advocacy, that these are these voices in the global south are asserting more and more influence within Methodism. So what we've seen is African Methodists especially, which comprise over one-third of the General Conference delegates, choosing to move the church in a much more pro-life direction in concert with American evangelicals.
Is that to say that they have that the non-American, non-United States-based Methodists have a stronger voice, but that the church in the U.S. remains kind of classic member of the Seven Sisters?
In many parts of the United States, Methodism that is very similar to what Episcopalians or Congregationalists or more liberal Presbyterians espouse. This is especially the case in the western United States and in the Northeast. However, those are areas that are in significant decline. The Methodist Church is doing much better in places like the southeastern and south-central areas of the United States. And people there tend to be more evangelistic in the version of Wesleyanism that they are promoting and practicing. So that is another thing that's made a difference. But yes, it's important to note that without the significant voice of Africans and other Global South Methodists, this decision would not have gone this way. This is something that United Methodism's kind of unique global character has really impacted.
I'm wondering, this is in both cases kind of an attrition of things. First of all, disaffiliation from the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, and then letting expire certain language in the Book of Resolutions. Does it signal perhaps a more positive direction, at least on the issue of abortion, where more explicit pro-life activity or even statements might be in the future for the United Methodist Church?
That's potentially the case. However, I don't want to overstate where Methodism currently is. The social principles of the Methodist Church are sort of what I would describe as being benignly pro-choice. They vaguely affirm certain areas where they believe abortion is permissible. However, they state that it's always a lamentable, tragic consequence. And in most cases, they have a series of restrictions that they've said in which abortion is not acceptable. Things like gender-selective abortion, abortion of children that are disabled, and also situations where abortion is used for birth control or late-term abortions. These are all areas where Methodists have, over the last several years, drawn a line and said, this is not acceptable. But at the same time that they've done that, we've also seen that Methodism has been affiliating with coalitions like RCRC, which did not allow for any restrictions on abortion. So there was just sort of this dissonance between Methodism and between a broader interfaith coalition that it was a part of. And delegates simply reached the point where they realized it was not any longer possible to keep that tenuous connection. If they were going to be true to the principles that they had begun to espouse on sanctity of life, they had to end this relationship with RCRC.
Another issue, where does the United Methodist Church currently stand, and did it have anything to say one way or the other with regard to natural marriage and the debate about human sexuality?
Mm-hmm. Well, the United Methodist Church's current position is that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that Methodists are to promote laws in civil society that promote man-woman marriage. And also at the same time, the church has long held, since the early 1970s, that homosexuality is, quote, incompatible with Christian teaching. So in that regard, in what's written down, Methodists have a traditionalist understanding of marriage and sexuality. However, there is a broad patchwork of uneven enforcement of these rules across the Methodist Church. So, for example, you may have heard that there have been some cases in the lead-up to General Conference in which Methodist clergy have presided over same-sex marriages or have themselves come out as what's referred to as self-avowed and practicing in their homosexuality, something that is against the ordination standards of the Methodist Church. Here is something where there's a conservative traditionalist understanding, but there is an enforcement that varies region to region. So that is one of the things that was talked about at General Conference, were proposals to go ahead and tighten the enforcement mechanisms for the discipline in these cases. However, there was a decision made that all of the sexuality resolutions would be shelved for the time being, and that a commission would be established that would be appointed by bishops to come up with recommendations on how to navigate these sexuality issues in the future. That commission is going to develop some proposals, and they will be presented to the General Conference for a vote at its next gathering in 2020. So right now, what we're looking at is no changes in the Methodist Church's traditional understanding of marriage or of sexuality, but we're also dealing with some inconsistent enforcement on those issues.
Finally, there will be 5 more African bishops the next time they meet, and that doesn't seem to be turning around. What would you say what that says for the future of the United Methodist Church on these issues of concern to conservatives? About 30 seconds here.
Yeah, it's very important to have these new bishops' positions in Africa. For example, in the country of Congo, there are well over a million practicing Methodists, yet they only have 3 bishops. And that compares to about 40 bishops in the U.S. So there's a real need to increase that the resources that are available for the Africans, because that's where the church is growing the strongest.
Jeff Walton covered the United Methodist Church's General Conference for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. You'll find a link to the Institute on Religion and Democracy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jeff, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Carl Fikancher. He joins us every week as we look forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary. We're going to be going into, I think he calls it the long green season of the church year. We've gotten past the festival season and, of course, Easter and the Ascension. This last Sunday, of course, was the Festival of the Trinity. What lies ahead? We'll answer that question when we come back. We'll be right back.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.